Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. Welcome, listeners, to the Global Marketing Show podcast. Today, we have a special guest all the way in from Romania. This is Loredana Nicolai, and she really understands the cultural challenges of working across borders. She's in Romania right now, so I'm lucky to be able to talk to her. We could sync up our on time schedule. So welcome, Loredana.
Thank you, Wendy. Thanks for having me. And hello to everyone that's listening.
Yeah. So let's start out with, what's your favorite foreign word?
My favorite foreign word is actually a word in Polish. Poland is one of the locations we have offices too. And once I was there, I was trying to figure out the local language. So what's funny is that Poland apparently is the third or the fourth toughest language to learn in the world. I was there at the conference. I was trying to say hello, okay, and I couldn't convey like the right accent or something. So I got at this point that people were just saying like, talk, and talk is yes, okay? So this is my favorite word right now, because I think it's one of the few I actually know in Polish.
Oh, that is so funny. So if you go to Poland, you can just say talk for hello, but it really doesn't mean that at all.
Like for yes, or for, you know, it's kind of a generic yes, or yeah, something like that.
And tell me again, what does it actually mean?
Yes. It means yes.
Oh, talk means yes in Polish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So now you live in Romania. You've done business in Poland. What other countries have you done business in?
So I've done business in the U.S. Quite a few of my businesses are located in the U.S. I have commercial, connections to most of the U.S., like North America, even like U.S. and Canada, and most of Europe. Right before the whole pandemic, I was rushed back home from the UK, where we were trying to set up another office for our company. We've done less business in Asia, in fact, but we're very interested to understand how that could work out for us, especially seeing what amazing recovery they had and the economic conditions they have there. And more and more customers are demanding support for things like the Emirates or even like South Africa. So probably this is also an organic extension of some of the areas we will go forward. But right now, our experience ranges in Europe and in North America.
Okay, so you're CEO of NN Services. Can you tell us more about what you do?
Yeah, so NNT Services is actually digital marketing company, but this is such a small definition of what we do. In fact, we assist most of our customers, which are B2B companies, with their growth. That means quite a bit, anything from understanding, you know, what is the strategy to achieve that growth, all the way to implementing and seeing, you know, what are the results of that growth. Today, that is quite a big portion of this business is technology assisted. So we do a lot using marketing and sales technologies anything from, I don't know, HubSpot and Dynamics and, you know, Salesforce. And these are most, like the biggest technology partners. And we work with each of those and are like, I don't know, platinum partner for HubSpot and so on. So that's a bit about NNC. Does that give you an idea of what we do?
Yeah, that's great. And so a lot of the companies that you're working with, it's not just in one country, you're helping them expand cross borders to grow.
Yes, I think 99.9% of what we do is helping companies expand cross border. Yeah.
And so where are most of your companies based?
There isn't one base. We haven't, we've actually tried to do that analysis. I think that most of our customers right now would be US based. Mm-hmm. But we also have, of course, a big local footprint in Romania and Poland. And we're starting to see quite a bit of traction in UK, Germany, and some of the Nordic countries. That being said, we had, as I mentioned, quite a few big customers in Canada or in Europe, for example, in countries like France or the Netherlands. So we're a digital-born company. We've always been this way. We're not very, locally grounded. So we've always worked remote from different locations. We've had always a geographically dispersed team and also a very diverse customer base.
When the companies come to you to work with you, are they already thinking that they want to be global, or will they come to you for services and then they can expand globally?
We've seen both of these situations. So, for example, a customer may want to see how they can achieve a growth, an ambitious growth, and usually that's like growing over 30% of what they are right now. And for example, for a country like the US, where most of the markets are very mature and competitive, achieving this growth locally sometimes is almost impossible, which means that part of the strategy, we may want to map and suggest what other geographies they could look at for possible growth. And for example, I don't know, but let's say Financial Force, which is one of the biggest Salesforce partners, right? Early stages, they could grow quite a bit locally. Okay, and there's a few more like Rootstock, which is a manufacturing resource planning company in the US. So once they've, let's say, exceeded the local market potential, they are looking into countries like Germany or the UK to expand their customer base, but then even operations. So usually after expanding the customer base also comes a portion of expanding like local operations, and that is part of their general business growth. So it's another way to achieve, let's say, an ambitious growth.
Okay. All right. There is so much good material in there. I'm really excited about breaking that down and exploring it. So let's start with U.S. companies. Many U.S. companies are afraid of going international because they don't know the language or they think the market is big enough. But you hit on something really important, that the U.S. markets are very mature. So if they want to keep growing at the rates that they're looking at, going to other markets is important. Are you seeing the companies that you're, the leaders that you're talking with, have these kinds of fears, or is it changing where they're understanding that more?
This is a very interesting question. So what we're seeing is, in fact, in the US, of course, the fact that there's like small and medium-sized companies. And for a small and medium-sized company, the strategy to expand locally may be working out well, especially early stages. we've also seen companies that are scaling up that need an international footprint, even to achieve bigger valuation. So for example, to achieve a bigger valuation and market cap and so on, some companies even have to show international or global operations, okay? Even from a competitive standpoint, even from access to new markets, even for proving long-term potential for growth and so on. And today, you know, living in the digital economy and having all this global digitalization trend accelerating, being global is not even something difficult or tough to achieve. On the other hand, what was interesting to me in particular is to see that some people actually, even in leadership positions, are sort of very conservative when it comes to tackling new markets. What that means is they associate sometimes quite a lot of time or the need of a large investment to get to a new market. And I would say that although that's true, and this is a way to achieve internationalization, like, of course, you can go to a market, you can invest for 3 years, open up a big office or something, do a lot of investment, see what comes up. I would suggest that given our times today, going digital, being agile, and being, I'm a fan of lean, for example, startup methodologies, even for new, entering new markets. So going lean in there, which means finding your first 10 target accounts, you know, enrolling them. Based on that, developing a local footprint and a local team. Then afterwards, figuring out, you know, what's that big office that you want and so on. Once you have the market proof that they want you and what type of a customer wants you there and so on. And this requires so much little investment towards, you know, the initial scenario, like the old school scenario. So I hope that that answers some of your question.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So the companies that maybe, are these mostly companies that have investments? Like are, you know, they have investors that are funding their growth, or are they business entrepreneurs that are funding their own way?
I would say that we work with mostly medium to large companies. So let's say maybe upper small to medium and large companies. Usually these are either, even if we work with entrepreneurs, the company is over $20 million maybe already. It's well sustained. Some of them do have investments, some attract investments with this purpose of going to new markets. So this may be in itself a purpose for getting financed.
Okay. So the companies are large enough to say we want to continue to grow, so yeah, we're going to go to international markets, but the leaders are afraid of it because they think it's going to be a big hassle to get an office, hire staff, and do all that. And what you're doing is you're coming in and showing them how they can do a lean start in a market to prove, yes, their success there and grow. Okay.
Now, and this is the case for US. In Europe, for example, companies are much more agile. In Europe, very small companies, even a couple of million dollars, especially service, B2B IT service companies, for example, are a typical case. They aggressively go sometimes even from the startup of the company to Western markets or the US. So in Europe, smaller companies are more, let's say, aggressive in their international expansion.
So US companies could learn a lot from the European smaller companies who are doing it from the start.
I think so. I think there's learnings on both sides. Like sometimes I would like maybe some European customers to have more of, to be more grounded, right, when they decide to go international, to have a solar local, a more solid local operation, which would allow them to be more focused even in their plans to expand. And I see that it's sometimes a risk when they're like really small to just go outside and you haven't even proven your model locally, but now you're hunting, you know, customers in a new culture that maybe you don't know much about and so on. So sometimes they need to learn from US businesses of being a bit more cautious about it. But other times US business could learn out of the agility of this companies that are, you know, more hungry, willing to accelerate growth faster and so on.
Okay, so talk to me about the lean strategy for entering a new market. You've got to pick a market to target, and then you've got to work all the way through that. How do you go about starting from that point and entering a new market?
Mm-hmm. For example, a part of our team that specialized in figuring out marketing strategy is usually doing a geographical analysis of the local market. So for example, let's say you have a business that, I don't know, sells electric bicycles or a mobility platform, or I don't know, we can name whatever. So they look at the market, and you cannot sell electrical bicycles in a market that does not have plenty of consumptions in terms of bicycles, probably, that they need to upgrade to newer bicycle technology, right? So for example, maybe Sweden may be an amazing case, but then if we look, let's say, to Sweden, and we figure out that there's already too much competition in Sweden, we may look also at other markets. So we do like a global scan, and there's different methodologies. The one that I really love, it's blitz scaling, for example. And blitz scaling is applied in different parts of the business. So there's a ton of tools and methodologies at this stage. But for example, blitz scaling is, there's also a book and so on, is showing you how usually a market develops really steady at the beginning, and then it goes like a hockey stick, right? So it turns around and it's going really accelerating up, okay? And so what we look at is that point of inflection. So we would scan global markets to see for a specific product or service, where is the market just picking off, okay? So where is our project or client or partner, where are they going to find that position where, you know, there's maybe early competition, but the market is ready to take the shift and they are going to at least have the potential for accelerated growth. We're also looking at factors like cultural compatibility, which means that this is not a factor to exclude. There's quite a bit of research showing that, for example, the two of us, if we work in marketing and we are pretty much at the same age, no matter where in the globe, we have more in common than people in our own culture of different ages that do something else, okay?
Right.
So from this standpoint, there's quite a bit of documentation showing that new culture shouldn't be that scary. But for example, if we find that it's, let's say, culture like Germany, where it the trust factor is very important, but they only trust, let's say, German technology, part of the strategy is telling the customer maybe, hey, Germany may be an amazing market for you, but please make sure that if you do local business development, you have a local sales representative because they trust more, let's say, each other than they would someone from, I don't know, US, let's say.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so So there's a lot that goes into cultural compatibility then, because it's not just people in the same country. It could be background, or it could be country, mm-hmm. or communication style, right? So how do you have a framework for looking at cultural compatibility?
Yeah, there's quite a few frameworks, of course, that there are the things like meta-analyses, and there's the Hofstede Index for Cultural Differences Assessment, which even if time passed and it's a classical one, people don't use all that much, and you'd be surprised how much you can learn, for example, from such a methodology just by looking even into old information, because cultures, even with our digital age, they may accelerate, let's say, globalization, but still inheriting traits kind of tend to accelerate. So, for example, if a culture is more individual or individualistic, mm-hmm. right, with the globalization, a person may tend to be more individualistic rather than to become more like the others, which I know sounds counterintuitive, but looking of even old school tools like this ones is very useful. Again, we're using this just as a reference, so this is not a factor to, I don't know, exclude the possibility, but just a factor to take into account when crafting your new market strategy.
Okay, so first you do like a geographic analysis and you look at the different methodologies for what's going to be successful. Then you go into cultural compatibility. What would you look at next as you're working through the lean marketing launch?
I would look for, I really love, especially for B2B companies that we work with, since we are more targeted this way, the ABM strategies, meaning that to understand what are some really good customers to acquire on that new market. So I would suggest what may be top 10, top 30, 50, depends on how big the company is and what is their how much focus they can put into the new market development, into things like, okay, which are those targeted accounts that we want? And I would suggest, or, you know, we would assist the customer in selecting a goal for the first year, something like, for example, let's have 5 out of this 50 targeted accounts already signed in our first year of being on the market. And I kind of like having, you know, KPIs like this, which also suggest what is the next market action. For example, a typical scenario that I would suggest to some of our customers is, okay, let's put some KPIs in place, like what is the number of customers we want in the first year? Then if we accomplish that, what is the number of maybe local employees or something we want in the first year? Then if we accomplish that, what are some next actions, right? So having a plan, but sort of each KPI flowing through from one to another. Of course, you have to look into things like the legal environment, the bookkeeping, how's the bookkeeping done, and so on. And this is sort of a bit later rather than crafting your strategy. So again, first you craft out this really nice strategy where you understand what you want when you enter into a new market. But then afterwards you go into things like, you know, the environment and what are the politics and so on. And that sometimes, that is also can favor quite a bit of the of your business strategy. To give you an example, most countries sign like strategic directions, okay? So for example, talking about UK, we were invited to open an office in the UK with quite a bit of support from DIT UK, which is the government body that actually gives us quite a lot of incentives to open a business there. Okay. Hmm. Which means that I was actually considering between Canada and the UK, but the UK was more open this way. So even though the competition is higher, we are thinking, okay, it will compensate with having quite a bit of, you know, incentives from the government. And so sometimes that can be also as part of strategy, not just a check off if you understand the legislation and if you can and how you can apply bookkeeping. For example, you may have tax exemptions. I know quite a few companies that go to new territories just because the tax situation is much better there, right? But coming back to your questions, what to consider, you know, in terms of a strategy, I would say that it's very important to identify this interest on the market. And I was explaining how ABM in this case is a real...
Yeah, let's just stop there and define ABM. So that's, you're talking about account-based marketing,
yes,
right?
Marketing, yeah, exactly. Like ABM is a specific strategy where you target and focus on targeting some specific accounts which you want to enroll, and it's very personalized and different than mass marketing, which in B2C is a different, let's say, approach to how you want to market. In account-based marketing, you try to understand as much as possible the individuals that you are targeting through your marketing activities. You try to bring value throughout the whole process of promoting your company. So promoting your company kind of becomes not a sales pitch, but it becomes finding that right fit between the value the customer perceives and what you can offer. Okay, and I love the personalization piece of the fact that in B2B, we don't sell to companies, but we sell to individuals within companies. Okay,
right, that's good to remember.
Yeah. I hope that answers the question.
Yes. Okay, so a lot really is driven by the strategy. So once you come in, you've picked your market. You've picked your, you know, you're using ABM and you've picked your target companies. You've looked at all the other things that go around. What else do you want to keep in mind for lean entry into a market?
I believe so lean entry being one of the agile methodologies that I believe can really work is to understand that even if you plan like 5 years in the future, you still have to adjust it based on the specific response, right? So let's say we are a month into entering the market, but then a pandemic situation comes, and then, you know, figure out, is this something you can use? And I've seen many of our partners and customers using that successfully. Or is this something that actually impairs or needs to be embedded or reorganized into your strategy? Okay, so being agile means always considering what are the things that you find out as you go and how you can embed, adjust, use, and ride the wave basically once you've entered the market. Then another thing is understanding what are your limitations. And when I say understanding what are your limitations, I'm referring especially to small and medium companies, because large enterprise usually have this figured out. But small and medium companies, when entering a new market, and I'm not just saying geographically, but even if they want to launch a new product or service, right? So tapping into a new market segment or something, they sometimes go all the way. And that I saw quite a bit not being healthy. Usually when you get into a new market, if it's a new market segment, if it's a new product or service launch or something, the way I've seen it best organized is, first of all, outside of your core business should still be 70 or 80% of your focus on the new business, let's say, the new market, the new segment, the new geography needs to be 20 or 30%. And more important than that, it needs to have its own dedicated resources, which means even dedicated personnel, like almost a total spin outside of your core business, right? And when I say understand your limitations, means don't go 100% into a new market that you don't understand. Just figure out first, you know, how will you, let's say, keep your 70 or 80% of the business going steady and still being stable, and only invest marginally into testing the new market, basically.
Okay, so test first. So that's one of the biggest mistakes you see. It is that is managers or owners or leaders may say, yeah, we're going into this market, and then they put all their attention there and forget what's going on and what's actually paying the bills.
Yeah, so there's a mistake like that. Another mistake that I've seen sometimes is doing too little of the effort on the new market. Okay, so for example, I've seen, this is why I was saying, put like actual in numbers or in effort, 20 or 30% and dedicate, let it, you know, work for a while. Okay, so for example, I've seen companies trying to get, let's say, a customer like in 6 months, and if that didn't work out, they would abandon a country or a geography or a new market segment. You know, sometimes it works even from the first month. And I've seen many successful cases to believe that if it's a good market fit, sometimes it does work really well. But sometimes I saw quite, you know, a big effort. I have two really good examples like this. For example, for one of our customers in Sweden, he's one of the biggest Ericsson partners. They do embedded technology. Entering a market like Germany took them about 3 years. In the first year and a half, they had no sales, okay? And actually, the first sale was €1,300,000, which is about $1,500,000. So that paid off for the whole effort for a year and a half. But then only in 3 years did they saw real traction, even with a local team and everything. Okay, so some territories need more time. Another customer that I saw, for example, was a big IBM partner here in Romania, which was trying to expand to the UK market, for example. And the UK market is very open to things that are coming from, example, from the former colonies or even from the US, but not that open to Eastern Europe, for example, cultural-wise, okay? Mm. So, for example, this partner took 2 years to open a local office and so on, until they saw some market traction. But otherwise, if they would have abandoned it in the first year, they wouldn't have seen the results of their investment. And the issue is that most of the investment is done, the effort is done up front, right, to open that market. So you have to give it time to see some results.
In the United States, we're not very good at taking time to look for results. How do you make the decision of how much time to invest versus when it's just not going to work and pull out?
I, you know, being an entrepreneur with quite a few businesses right now in different spaces, like even in, you know, biotechnologies or food or things, you know, education, I believe anything worse given the time and effort. So I'm at that stage where I believe that if you put enough time and effort into it, anything works. However, I'm not seeing that US partners don't give enough time. Most of our partners actually are more patient than, for example, companies in Eastern Europe that are less patient, or they have less money to or effort to spend on new market entries. So I'm not seeing that's true. However, what I am seeing is in terms of our US partnership is the need for instant response. And what instant response means that if they see that the communication is good, it's timely, they get feedback and so on, they would put the patients into a project or into a partnership. Okay, so they don't necessarily need a sale right now, but if they see that the reply from potential prospects, let's say, or from partners from the market and so on is good, they would build in this patience. So you could nurture US partners or customers to build this patience by giving them more feedback. Now, in Europe, we're not that great, although I know I'm talking quite a bit here, but we're not that great into providing instant reply, right? To give an example, in the US, I learned, and I had to learn quite a bit, that after a conversation, I need to send a thank you note, okay? Usually, after a conversation, I was taking notes. And if there was something to solve by me, I would solve it and only report after I've done that. So it could take like a week or two until I would message, let's say, a partner or a colleague in the US about something that I've done as a consequence of our meeting. So I had to learn that I have to, right after the call, I have to write two lines of thank you for the meeting, here's what I committed or we committed to do, and let's revisit in a week, right? And we're not that good. So I think that this is where the cultural, the business culture comes and you know, reducing some of that friction can actually help. But I don't think that US people are like, I would say they're average in terms of patience between cultures that would give you 3 years and $1 million and see what happens afterwards. And I've seen that, for example, in Germany, and cultures that need a market feedback in a month. And I've seen that with Eastern European countries very much.
Wow, isn't that interesting? Okay, because I've heard more that Americans are less likely to build the relationship and have less patience. So that's good to know. We're in the middle. You build the strategy, you do your research, you take the time to go into the market. So I'm hearing all this, and your English is fantastic. So this is enabling you to work in the US and the UK. What are you seeing with your clients in the way of global marketing or translation or handling the different language issues?
I think that we're all seeing better and better English skills. Like, I would consider my English skills poor against, for example, my daughter, that she's a teenager and she's probably gonna take medical school some in the US or something. So her English is quite exquisite, so I'm actually impressed. And the new generation, I think that in Poland, sometimes I would speak with someone and they would have a perfect British accent. I wouldn't even guess that they are native in Poland, right? So I believe that most of these countries in territories like probably Asia, Eastern Europe, and so on, they're becoming better and better at English. In terms of countries that are really well developed, for example, big markets like France and Germany, still maybe English skills are not great, but they are getting there. Like talking to someone in English in Germany right now is so much easier than it was 20 years ago. So definitely it's improving. I also believe that I love how polite, for example, US people are in terms of their English languages. Like I would always excuse myself for not being native and not speaking a perfect English and so on, and they would always reassure me something like, you know, but it's okay, we don't know, you know, your language as much as you do ours and so on. So I think that helps, like realizing that people are kind and good on both sides. I haven't seen a lot of language barriers in the US or in other territories when US people are trying to get there. And for example, I'm dealing with people that went to Brazil with their business, or they went to Asia and so on, and all seems fine. I do see a language barrier when it comes to, for example, Germany. Or even the Nordics sometimes, like even if Swedish people speak perfect English, they would still buy easier, or Danish people or people in Norway, they would buy easier from someone that speaks their language rather than someone that speaks English, even though they know perfect English, okay? So, and they speak amazing English. So I think that in just some territories, it's still a differentiator for businesses that want to make it there, but most are not. These are not like very serious challenges.
Okay, so I understood when you were talking about it, that's a lot of the spoken language. So people could communicate and provide customer service, go through the sales. What about like websites or user manuals or any of the written documentation? Are people in those countries still willing to read it in English?
I myself prefer to have things in the original language, just because even though the technology, translation technology has advanced so much, because I have a decent understanding of English, I prefer to read it in English or in French or some a few other things that I understand. Sometimes getting the local aspect of it or the original language is better. In Romania, I would bet you that, and in Poland, I would bet you that many, many people are actually preferring English over the local language, especially for technical research or for even marketing or business development purposes. So I think that in some territories, there's a preference. However, there are cultures like French, the French culture or the German culture, that prefer out of politeness to have it in their own language. What that means is, to give you an example, when we had live events where we needed to go like for in-person events, okay, like big trade shows or conferences and so on, if us or one of our customers would be present in an event in France or in Germany, we would have to bring our collaterals in the local language. So we would have to pay like a translation service or something, just because this is normal business practice and it's considered good manners to prepare yourself for the so if you're going there, you have a commercial interest, so it's your own interest to be polite this way, okay? But otherwise, I see that quite a few people are searching in English. I also believe that translation technology is so strong right now. I was doing some research right now. I mentioned that I have another startup that I'm directly an entrepreneur with that's doing a lot of DNA and biotech. And I was doing research earlier today, and for example, guessing based on my IP that I'm from Romania, Google was still trying to translate pages that I could easily grasp in English. But I think that as this technology evolves, and the translation was very, very good, and it was really technical terms, so not something light. So as this technology probably evolves, people will actually not even be given the option, but will be given directly in their own
language. Oh, okay. Yeah. Content. Yeah, no, and that's, from our standpoint, we're certainly seeing it, that the technology has gotten so much better and that it does give more people access to the translation. Yet looking at the cultural nuances or really making sure the message gets across, it's not there. So there's some instances where it's very good, other instances where you can't use it at all. Like what you were talking about bringing the collateral, that it's good manners. You probably had humans doing that as opposed to technology.
Yeah, we're always double checking with, human-powered companies or services or freelancers when it comes to the local language. There's such sensitive issues that you cannot believe that may trigger like a totally different reaction. So it's better to still be cautious about, you know, technology taking over and giving us what we need instantly, and then make sure we use like decent, people that actually know the language, like real natives. Otherwise, even if they know the language really well, it's tough to understand those nuances that you've just mentioned.
Okay, so you're, as you talk about it, I can see you're very clear in your head as to where the technology will work, where if you're on the internet and you're doing research and you come across something and your language skills are enough to get the gist of what it is. But if you're really talking to somebody and you want to connect, then you use a human translator, and you even go so far as to say that they have to understand the culture to get it right.
Yeah, I think so. We've done quite a few tests talking about strategy in terms of, for example, Switzerland has 3 or 4 official languages.
Right.
And you never know who you come across. So what we've done talking about connect conversations for one of our customers, we actually used, I believe, like 3 a basic message, short message to say hello and who I am and so on to connect, but then a translation in both French and German. So the main message was in English, but then below was French and German. It was really, really well received, okay? Although I believe everybody in Switzerland knows English quite well, it was well received, the effort to go in all languages.
Wow, okay. So that's very interesting that you did that. So rather than trying to guess the language off a location or name, you just offered the basic language in all 3, and then however they replied, you would engage with them in that language.
Yeah, there's also more, let's say, modern technologies right now in terms of marketing automation, that once a contact is in your database, it can guess based on their IP or how they subscribe to a form that you had and so on, what country they're from. And for example, in Germany, there's this challenge about the gender, so addressing with hello, Mr. or hello, Mrs. It seems to be like really, really big factor. But there's also technologies, like even HubSpot, I think, has this feature where you can personalize the way you address someone in that language, gender specific or with specific particularities that, it would take someone weeks to just write by hand. So some of this personalization can also be technology, assisted. But yeah, in terms of human-to-human communications, it's still important to have that personal touch, at least for some of the initial conversations. So to have someone that knows the culture. I remember early stages when I was trying to open our business in the US, lucky me, I had 2 local partners that could assist me even with this basic conversation. I used to bounce back and forth, even messages like, do you believe the customer will receive this message okay? Or do they understand what I'm trying to convey here? And sometimes I would get a reply from them like, hey, this seems a bit aggressive, or I would, you know, if I would get this message, I would react very strongly to it or something, and I would reread it. And for me, it seemed like the perfect message, but for them, it triggered some, you know, cultural or some educational piece. I don't know. For example, for us, it's really interesting to type in big letters your name. Like, it's something nice. And when I was doing that initially in the US, people were like, why are you screaming? And I couldn't understand, you know, I'm not screaming.
Oh, that's so funny, right? Because if you type in all caps in the United States, you're screaming at somebody. But in exactly. Romania, you're kind of giving them honor.
Yeah, like, or right now we've also borrowed this. So in the last 10 years, it became like a digital norm that if you write with caps lock or something, so I have to apologize even here. But it didn't used to be like that, like 20 years ago when I was doing initially business in the US. So I had to learn, for example, I really loved underlining things with red or just typing in the red, just because red is our company culture, and like the colors and the brand and so on is red, and I believe it's associated with the passion, you know, that we put into things and so on. But when I was doing that, people were like, what's happening? Why are you typing in red? Is there something wrong? Do you want to correct this? And so on. So,
right. Oh, that's so funny, which can vary a lot. I mean, the other thing that I've noticed across languages is where you use a period, where you use a comma, how the spacing is, the capitalizations, like all that can vary across languages, even if it's the same alphabet.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what recommendations would you have for somebody who's starting their journey to do this?
So I would believe that, first of all, trying to understand and to build some human connections on the new market is very interesting and important. And this day and age, it's really easy to reach out to someone via LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever you prefer in terms of social networks. Just connect with someone locally, either someone that looks like a perfect partner or some inside person within a company that you target, that, but maybe that's not that high end that you risk losing if they respond negatively, but maybe like a lower project manager or something that can provide you some inside info and so on. There's we've had also a webinar which was rather interesting in terms of B2B marketing strategies for next year. And I remember Lumi, which is one of our is a marketing manager and one of our customers and partners from Zenit, which is a big company in Germany. She was mentioning some platforms for example, influencers, B2B influencers. So right now, this new influencer marketing is becoming more and more important in our space, right? Like before, it was just in the consumer. Now it's getting into the B2B space. And I think the platform was Think360, but there's other platforms where you
can... What was the name of the platform?
I think it's Think360. One second. That
Think like THINK 360.
Yeah. One second. Think360studio.com.
Okay, so it's Think THINK 360. The numbers.
So that you can have it. The idea is that, for example, you can choose someone like an influencer on that market and have some real people, human conversations to understand what that market is about, right? Is there a fit? Is there not a fit with what you're trying to do? As I mentioned, maybe not going full speed with a lot of investment and so on, but maybe go more lean or more agile, try to go through a virtual office, especially with the situation right now. It's not even healthy to go with a physical office there, right? So if you want to show local presence, maybe don't get a huge office space, but get a virtual office. Go meet with customers face to face. And when I say that, even via like you don't need to be in person, but maybe even via Zoom, okay, let's see each other, because seeing builds trust and maybe people open up differently. I also saw some success, for example, even in our case, in following our partners and customers to new markets, right? So for example, the way we got to US was because one of our business customers was developing a local presence there. We assisted them initially to landing in the US and landing some good customers and prospects. But then we opened up our own office there. Okay. So basically following their success. And you can easily do that by looking into your suppliers network, your customers network, because they're probably companies that are pretty much in the same space that you operate. So if a customer, if a new market proves successful for them, it very much may prove successful for you as well in terms of a company. In general, using this referral network, right, to get to your new market is really one of the keys in B2B, right? For example, I remember I think I bugged one of our first customers so much about giving me referrals and so on, but this was the way I even signed off some of the first deals in the US. I couldn't have done it without them referring to us. Of course, we found something of value to compensate, but even so, I think I owe them more than we were able to compensate over time. However, asking, for introductions, either for your network of partners or for customers that are happy and so on, is a really good way to expand your network of contacts into a new market. I also like to believe that you should go where people go, in terms of where's your people, right? Where's your customers? Do they go to this amazing, digital event about leadership, women leadership in Africa? If they do, you have to be there, right?
Right.
So where do they go? And this is like general rules of thumb when it comes to marketing. So it's not necessarily specific to opening a new market, but actually being down to earth in terms of understanding that it's still marketing and business strategy. Before the pandemic, I would have advised someone to really travel there. It's such a different feel when you are there rather than when you read about something. Okay.
Right. Yes.
So I believe that it's very important, this local feeling, being there, understanding, from the inside what is happening. And I used to remember that we were advising companies even to relocate, for a portion of the time or even full time, someone from the company management to the new location, because this, feet on the street, or I don't know how to define it, is very important. So the actual physical presence to the new territory and having direct feedback from someone you can trust and empower to do things on your behalf. And last but not least, like I could go on forever, but I know we have a limited time.
This is so valuable and helpful. So what's the last one?
I would suggest that, for example, since most of these expansions may come with investment and so on, why not try to raise local funding with your market expansion? For example, let's say a customer in the US decides to expand on a country like Greece, right? If you do that, trying to get some Greek investment, okay, some local money, even if they may be small or something, can like almost guarantee your success just because you will already have partners there that are interested in you succeeding on the new market. Probably do that after you've proven the market fit. So basically, once you see that you have some traction, that you have some customers, decide to open up an office with people and so on, like getting money locally, even if it's in countries like Kenya's, and I, believe me, I've seen this done in countries like Kenya, getting money locally, even from a government fund that may, you know, support foreign businesses that want to localize in the new territory for new competencies. Like in Poland, it's an amazing service if you want to set up shop there. Or from private investors, or even from business angels. I saw that this is a real successful case when it comes to market expansion.
That's a really interesting idea. I haven't heard about that or thought about that before. So thank you for sharing that. Definitely want to keep that in mind. All right, we are running out of time now. What's your, a couple of fast fire questions for you. First, what's your favorite place to do business?
It's a tough question. I love doing business everywhere. If I would have to choose, I have two. I can do less than two. So Boston is an amazing place. I love Boston. I have many friends there, and I don't think I would have done such a good business anywhere in the world. So it was an amazing first decision to expand my business directly to Boston.
And you're not just saying that because I'm near Boston, huh? You just like it here.
Oh, okay.
That's funny. All right, that's good to know.
Yeah, and I think almost equally important for me to my heart is Warsaw. Warsaw is the Polish capital city, and I love the same, you know, same as with Boston. The people make a huge difference for me, and we had amazing. We've built amazing relationships with, you know, colleagues, partners, customers, and so on. So these two cities are at the top of my mind.
Oh, that's great to hear. How about your favorite vacation place?
Greece, especially Kos Island.
Which island?
Kos Island. It's South Greece.
Oh, okay. We went to Sifnos a couple years ago, one of the islands, and loved it. Yeah, Greece, I can understand Greece. All right, so you have been a wealth of information today. If people might want to look you up or talk to you, particularly if they're want to expand internationally, where can they find you?
So, of course, they can email me, they can call me, they can reach me out via LinkedIn. If you want, I can share with you all of these links and you can share further. I'm pretty much available in the digital.
Okay. So, your email, why don't you go ahead and give that to us here? Your email address?
So it's loredana.nicolae@nnc.services.com. NNC-services.com. I've typed it in the chat window. My link.
Okay, so hang on just a second. So for our listeners, it's Loredana, LOREDANA, dot Nicolae, NICOLEA, at NNC, that's Nancy. Dash services.com. And then where can they find you on LinkedIn?
So my LinkedIn profile is linkedin.com/in/ Loredana Nicolae. Again, I've just typed it into the chat window if you want to share this with anybody. Okay.
Okay. Excellent. We'll put it on the show notes too. Well, thank you so much. You are a brilliant woman, an extremely successful business person, and you've got an amazing amount of information for people that want to expand across businesses. So I really, really appreciate you coming on today and speaking with me.
Thanks, Wendy. And one other thing that I wanted to add, I very much appreciate you inviting me to your show. I've started listening to it as part of my education, so thanks. One more thing, we have a community, a growth community. It's called B2B Growth Community. It's via LinkedIn and Facebook right now, where we deliver quite a bit of information, anything from how to, you know, get international businesses, how to market and how to sell products and so on. I invite you all to subscribe to that. And if I can help with anything, do reach out to me. Thanks so much for having me here.
Thank you. I'll go join the Facebook now. So all the listeners out there, please forward us on. If you learn something from this, forward us on to somebody who you know might be interested. You can find us on all your favorite places to listen to podcasts. And also, we'd appreciate a rating. If you can give us a 5-star rating, that would be appreciated. And if you can't give us a 5-star rating, why don't you just get in touch with me and tell me how we can improve. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.